Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon on the Bob McCowan podcast, available where fine podcasts are found.
Did you write that down?
No, I didn't. I just came up with that off the top of my head.
Yeah, well, I would write it down.
Is my nose growing? And also on Sirius XM, where fine podcasts are also found.
Sure, our buddy Mansbridge is here too.
Well, he's not here, but he's on Sirius. Yes, he's on the same channel we're on.
Same channel?
Oh, yeah. He's been here, but he's not here right now. No. It is interesting to me, though, that we have invited Mansbridge on numerous occasions to be on this program, both when it was on radio and now as a podcast, and he has never reciprocated, not once.
Well, Bob, true confession, I have been on Peter's podcast.
Oh, really?
But I think it was before ours started. It was about 6 weeks before the NHL went into the bubble. And Peter was kind enough to ask Gord Miller and me to come on to talk about predictions of whether hockey would actually be played and what would the NHL do and what were their timelines. But that, that's about 18 months ago.
Well, now that I know that, even if Mansbridge calls, I'll tell him, get lost.
Well, yeah, but you were doing that one-man band thing. You were doing that one-man band thing then, you know.
No, I was happier, podcasts... too.
No, Bob, you have never been happy. So what are you talking about?
I was happier, I said. Pay attention.
It's all, it's all relative?
Excuse me. It's degrees. Yeah, okay. There were degrees anyway, of happiness.
So you were doing that 13 minutes of fame thing or whatever it was called.
No. Okay, you got 5 minutes.
Yeah. Nobody likes a five-minute podcast.
Oh, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, but last I checked, it has to be the listener that enjoys it.
I can do five of those in a third the time I do one of these.
Oh, you know, and then you didn't have to put up with me. So.
Ditto.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'll contemplate putting Mansbridge in the Bat Black Book.
Oh, stop. Pete's coming back soon. We didn't even have him on about the post-election.
Well, if this is supposed to be a sports podcast, I mean, you know, I understand both of us are interested in other things besides sports, but this is why people, I think, tune in. They don't care about your opinions or even my opinions, shockingly, about anything outside of sports. So,
and I'm not sure they care about our opinions on sports either.
Well, they may not do that either, too. You know, so, yeah. Well. What do they pay? What does it cost to watch or listen to us? What do they pay them?
It's free, Bob. Well, exactly. Actually, if you're a serious subscriber, you have to pay.
Well, yeah, but that's an add-on.
If you listen on the podcast, it's free.
Well, if you're watching on YouTube or wherever, or our video channel, or if you're listening to this in the car or walking around or whatever the hell you're doing, having a shower.
There's a good question.
Well, I'll decide whether it's a good question. Ask it first. Go ahead.
Do you listen to any podcasts?
Not a one.
You don't?
No idea how this works.
Well, we knew that. That's pretty obvious. But you don't find a podcast on Sirius's lot that you've listened to or watched?
Well, I haven't explored it. I have no interest. I have no interest in listening to anybody else, and I have no interest
listening to anybody other than yourself.
Well, only while I'm talking. I have never listened to this podcast after the fact, just as I never listened to the radio show over 40 years after I did it. When it's done, it's over.
Yeah.
I mean, we touched
on that with Houston last week.
Yeah, I don't want to... I don't want to fall into a trap of listening to somebody else and picking up a catchphrase or, you know, ever be accused of saying something that I heard and purporting it to be mine that I heard somebody else do. It doesn't make any sense. Either you do it and either it's good enough or it isn't. It's as simple as that.
I was just curious if you did it for pure entertainment when you're out, walking in the new neighborhood, you know?
Walking in the new neighborhood?
Yeah.
I drive in the new neighborhood. I walk to the car.
You know, that Burger King is walkable. You know, that Burger King
like hell it is.
Is walk. Oh, Bob.
Like hell it is.
It's about four blocks.
Yeah, exactly. It's not walkable at all.
Come on.
My next door neighbor isn't walkable. Although I've seen him a couple times over the fence. Very nice guy.
Yeah, only nose up, right?
Well, no, but I don't know. What's the height restriction on fencing in Mississauga?
Well, if you have
would
a
know
pool,
this, you've lived here for a long
if
time.
If it's a pool, I think it's 5 feet.
See, I think it's 5 feet in Toronto, but there's my neighbor in the back has a fence that's at least six, probably 7 feet tall. So if that's legal, that's what I want. If it's not legal, I'm calling the cops on them.
Oh, so you don't want to be seen by anybody. You just, you know, you might as well just be in minimum security prison.
Well, that's why you have a fence, John.
No, the only reason we have a fence
because you have
to keep
dogs.
The dogs in. Yeah, to keep the dogs in.
Well, and I don't have a dog currently, so I don't have that problem.
You want a dog?
No, I'm going to get a dog at some point.
All right. What are you going to call?
Hey, you. I know exactly what he looks like too. So this COVID stuff that won't go away.
It's here to stay. Actually, it's COVID. COVID's here to stay.
Yeah, well, I think you're probably right. But see, I just don't understand the reluctance of people to get the shot. And there's only one explanation for it in my mind. They're a bunch of sucky chicken turd babies who don't want anybody to stick a needle in their arm. That's got to be what this is all about. There's no other explanation for it. They're just a bunch of scaredy cats. And we're talking NBA players who have had surgeries, who, you know, hurt every day and have all kinds of things done, but stick a needle in your arm? No, I don't gotta do that. And then they come up with some poppycock about religious beliefs or this, that, and the other thing to hide the fact that they're scared to get a needle.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt.
The thing is that at a certain point in their careers as professional athletes, you know, I think it's a pretty good assumption that they have had needles. They have taken painkillers. They have, you know, there have been some medical procedures, period, you know, are all invasive. So I think it's frustrating, particularly when it pertains that they don't understand what the reason for the vaccination is. So it's disappointing, you know, I mean, and I think the level of complaint would have been higher in the NHL, except the NHL said to them, listen, you know what, if you don't want to go to the Olympics, then we won't insist on this type of protocols. So the NHL had their guys over the barrel a little bit.
Well,
I mean, there's 12 guys in the NHL now that of 800, 12 guys out of 800 that aren't vaccinated. And there's a separate set of rules for them. You know, there are some guys that have been disinvited, if that's a word, to preseason, to training camp.
Well, you know, and again, it's all a bunch of BS, but I mean, I've heard players who have teammates who haven't been vaccinated and they give you the spiel like, well, it's his decision and we're going to support him and blah, blah. It's a pile of crap. You know, if you care about yourself, then you want your teammates vaccinated. You want the guys that you're in a dressing room with, on the ice with, in a hotel with, on a bus with, in a plane with. You want everybody around you vaccinated. Do you not?
Oh, well, in fact, yes. But I mean, there are a separate set of rules for the non-vaccinated players.
Well, whatever. I don't care.
But they can't even do the things you talked about.
But so I don't care.
I think the peer pressure. The NBA, we haven't seen those rules yet.
Stand up and say,
any of those rules.
I don't want to be around this guy. Cut this guy from my team if he won't have a needle stuck in his arm.
You would, if you were Kevin Durant, you'd say that about
damn straight.
About Kyrie.
You bet your sweet ass I would.
Yeah.
I would absolutely say, screw him.
Yeah.
Kick him off the team. Don't let him around. I don't want him around me. And I don't want to be on the same team with a guy who cares so little, forget about his own health, but the health of his teammates, that he won't do it. If he won't do it for himself, then do it for your teammates. That's my position on it. It's as simple as that. It can't be any more simple. We understand there are a lot of stupid people in the world, a lot of stupid people. But this is life and death.
I also think that there's a real misinterpretation of what the vaccine is supposed to do for you. Vaccine is not a cure.
We get that, John. Yeah, I know.
No, you do. You do. But I think there's lots of people out there that think that, oh, I'm vaccinated, I'm cured. Now I don't have to wear a mask in certain situations. Now I don't have to social
distance in certain situations. Well, that's another topic. You're right. That's another topic altogether.
But I think, that, you know, so it's one of those, I saw an interview this morning with Cedric Ceballos, who the former NBA player that was in intensive care for 20 days. Even after being in for 20 days, he refused to say, please get vaccinated. He refused to say it. And because he believes it's a personal philosophy.
What a pile of crap.
Well, it was mind-boggling to me. That's for sure. It was mind-boggling to me. And these are people, we know that they have measles shots. They know they've had rubella shots.
Well,
yeah,
but most of that happened when they were 2 years old or 1 year old and they didn't have any
choice. So what, Bob? So what?
Oh,
no.
I'm with you, John. You're not, you're preaching to the choir here.
Okay. All right.
You know.
Well, anyway, so the NBA thing is far from resolved. Far from resolved, Bob. Because you know the state of New York and the state of California have rules in place. If you're not vaccinated, you cannot even play. You can't play. And so
So Andrew Wiggins can sit his ass on the sidelines.
And can't play home games right now.
Well, if he doesn't play, does he get paid?
None of this has been resolved in the NBA yet, Bob.
That's what they need to resolve, because that's where it's going to end.
Yeah, that's right.
That's where it's going to end. The NBA has got to stand up and say, you don't get vaccinated, you don't play. You don't play, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
Now, you do what you want to do. You do what you want to do, but you ain't getting a check. You want to take 50 games out of your schedule?
Yeah, that's the NHL's. That's what the NHL has told players. If you aren't vaccinated and you can't play, you will be suspended and you will not receive a check.
Well, I just suspend them if they're not vaccinated, period. And then,
the Columbus Blue Jackets have said, if you're not vaccinated, you're not on the team.
Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
Exactly what they should say.
Other teams haven't done that. Detroit hasn't done that. Edmonton hasn't done that.
I'm gonna walk up and down my neighborhood now and knock on doors and ask people if they're vaccinated. And if they're not vaccinated, I'm gonna tell them, move.
Well, first of all, we know you're lying because you're not walking that far next door.
Oh, yeah.
You have to do it in your car. You're going to need one of those speakers on the top
of
your car.
I'll drive next door.
That's right.
Roll down the window and yell.
Okay, Morosi's ready.
Well, thank God for that. Some baseball talk. Well, what else are you going to talk about? This is it. This is what you play. You play all year for this. If you're a fan, you follow it all year hoping for this. You know, fans will tell you they'd be happier if the Blue Jays were six games in front and home and cooled out, essentially, or seven games in front. But the truth of the matter is, this is what you hope happens, that you're going to have maybe as many as six games that are life and death. There is no fooling around. There is no tomorrow. This is it. Yankees for three, Orioles for three. Figure it out. John,
by the way, the Mariners are only a half game behind.
I know you're a Seattle Mariner fan because of your geographic influences.
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, you always, you know, you accuse me of talking about the Ohio State Buckeyes, which I only do when Morosi's on, because I know it drives him crazy. But you continually bring up all the Seattle teams over and over and over again. Hey, I don't know. And I can't wait till the Kraken start. Oh, see, they started, you even know that is indicative of exactly where your mindset is. Morosi, when we come back after these messages. And we're back. It's McCowan here, Shannon there. And JP Morosi joins us. He was a little bit late today.
No, I understand. The podcast guy doesn't know that. It's just the length of the commercial.
No. Well, but I'm going to inform him. That's what I do. So Morosi was a little late today. He was watching the Michigan Wolverines lose an inter-squad game. Today, and which happens with some regularity these days. Remember when Michigan actually had a good football team?
Yes, Bob, I do. And if you must know, and since we've opened up this door to explain to our listeners why I was a bit late today, the real part of the story was I had a dental appointment, all good, no cavities. And as you know, Bob and John,
don't care.
Traffic in Ann Arbor now is very busy. We've got an undefeated football team, which is not the case in Columbus. And we have four of the top five returning NHL draft picks on one hockey team. That's never happened in the history of hockey. No junior team in Canada, no junior team in the U.S., no college team in the U.S. has ever had four of the top five picks. So we've already got tremendous enthusiasm, an exhibition game on Saturday. For Michigan against Bowling Green. So
guys,
they're already all coming to town, Bob.
Well, hey, let's John, also just, let's just, also just, clarify just something.
To let you know, though, John, we've had more Michigan Wolverine hockey players on the podcast than we have had Ohio State Buckeye hockey players.
No surprise there. Well, no surprise to this veteran observer, I'm telling you.
Yeah. In Columbus, they're only interested in their professional team, and Ann Arbor will never have one. So, well, unless you include the football team, but they don't perform well. And by the way, your football team is undefeated. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And they played who? William and Mary, Nick and Tony, and Rutgers. So if you can't win
Rutgers
those.
Rutgers gave them a run for their money, Bob.
They damn well did. They damn well
University of Washington. Have you heard about them? Michigan won that game as well.
Yeah, well, hey, don't talk about anything in Seattle today with Bob. He's in a bad mood about Seattle. I don't know why.
Well, do know why. I told you exactly why.
Regarding the Kraken or something else?
Well, everything. Oh, Shannon is obsessed with all things Seattle because he comes from BC. He hasn't been there for 50 years, but he has this thing about all West Coast stuff. It's all very important to him. Especially Seattle for reasons that are in.
They're making the playoffs this year, the Kraken. They're going to make the playoffs. I'm not sure about the Mariners, but the Kraken will make the playoffs.
Hold on. What?
Yeah, well, that's because they got the.
Look at the division. Now, they would not make the playoffs in the Atlantic. But the Pacific, wow. I have to see. Now, here's the question. Well, isn't it basically what? You'd have to look at it and say between the Flames and the Canucks and the Kraken, probably one of those three teams makes the playoffs, right? Maybe even two, but probably one.
You want to bet? I think that's probably fair. I think that's fair, like, but I don't think it's the Kraken.
Would you like to make a wager? You know, you watch the Las Vegas Golden Knights go to the Stanley Cup final in their first year. You think all expansion teams now can do that?
That was I don't, but I would say this. Let's just since we're going down that road, look at the defensive core alone. Okay, look at Seattle's D-core. Giordano, Larson, Oleksiak, Vince Dunn, Soucie, the other teams I mentioned. Does Calgary have a better defensive core than that?
Wait a second. Can I ask a question?
Does Vancouver?
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
In the National Hockey League, can you win a game nothing?
Well,
because that's what they're going to have
fairness,
to do.
You're right. In fairness, we'll see. I think that if their power play is good enough, I think Eberle will score. Does he score 20 goals? I don't know. But I think Eberle will give some offense there. Schwartz, I think
you are dreaming
top line minutes.
You are dreaming in Technicolor. They're a bunch of has-beens or never-wases. They're ordinary guys. It's a collection of ordinary guys. The defense, by comparison, looks pretty good. But you got to score some goals.
They can't score goals.
If the opposition scores first, game's over. Go home.
All right, we'll see. And by the way, maybe.
What is the wager? What is the wager here?
Anything
I want
he
the
wants.
Wager.
Well, anything I, he wants.
First of all, I don't. I'll say this. Okay, here we go. This all is right. It. A live wager on air. Okay, here we go. Since I don't wager money, I just don't do that. What I'm going to do here is if the Kraken make the playoffs, then once the playoffs begin, we do a show where Bob wears a Michigan shirt. And if they miss the playoffs, I'll wear a Buckeye shirt. Promise. How about that, Bob? What do you think about that?
I don't have a Michigan shirt, and I'm not
going to send you one.
We'll get you one.
I'm not going to spend money.
We'll get you one.
We'll get you one, Bob.
I think that sounds like a really, really good.
John, I was actually hoping for a, so we're gonna, for a steak dinner.
We're going to bet. Well, we're never going to get together because it's, you know, Americans don't like to get shots, and the Republicans are a bunch of idiots. So we may never see each other in person again after all these years of being together. This is as close as we may come. So how are you going to have dinner? I mean, I can go to my fridge, pull out some HelloFresh, cook something up, but Morosi won't be able to taste it.
We'll figure it out one way or the other. If we find a way, maybe I can, you know, you think about the World Juniors. I got to see Shane Wright play in person at some point in time. So I'll come to Canada. Well, we're going to make this happen.
No, but John, if the Jays get the American League Championship,
then I'll be there.
You got to be here.
I'll be there. 100%. We'll make that happen.
Our restaurants are open.
Yeah.
We have restaurants.
We'll eat outside. That's what I do here.
There you go. So Blue Jays make the postseason. The three of us will get together. We'll go to Port Credit or something, John.
There you go.
Absolutely. We'll pick John up. We'll bring John out to the nice little West End village.
Well, we'll take him. We'll find a restaurant overlooking the lake, and he'll feel like he's in Ann Arbor. What lake is Ann Arbor on? Oh, no.
We have a river. We have a river, Bob.
Barely. You barely have a river. Barely. All right, let's get to baseball.
All right.
Well, this is great, isn't it? This is. I said this off the top of the show, but I can't reiterate it more. I've been around the Toronto Blue Jays since day one, before day one, 1976. And every year your team or your hometown team gets into a race like this, you don't want to blow it off. I mean, nobody call me for the next few days at least. I'm not going out to dinner. I'm not going to be away from the television set. I'm going to be firmly planted in front of the television set, although I'll be pacing like crazy. And I'm only a kind of a borderline fan. This is what it's about. It's fantastic. It's great. And 6 weeks ago, you'd have bet $1 million we'd never be here, Morosi.
You're right, Bob. I think that one of the measures of a successful season, and obviously there are different ways to quantify it, but when you get to the final week of the regular season and you have a homestand, especially when you consider all the Jays have been through three different home ballparks this year, you're at Rogers Center, capacity has been increased, the Yankees are in town, and to some extent, you do control your own destiny. Now, to truly control your own destiny as the Jays, you really have to sweep the series, because if you don't sweep, you still need help with someone beating the Red Sox. But in general, you do begin this game Tuesday, the final Tuesday of the regular season, controlling your own destiny. And you have Hyunjin Ryu on the mound, someone who certainly has been a Cy Young finalist. Yes, he struggled a bit this year, but you have someone that you know and that you've trusted in the past is on the mound tonight against Jameson Taillon of the Yankees. And it's just a great matchup. And you have to look at the way the Jays have played. They have not been perfect. They have dropped some games that you would have rather seen them win. But by and large, they have been one of the best teams on the planet for the last month and a half. And they have earned this right to have a stage like this in a game like this against the Yankees, your rival. You're right, Bob. This is a time when I think it is entirely appropriate to be very romantic and very hopeful about baseball.
Well, we all, when we watch sporting events, and I think we're all the same, we want something meaningful. And I've used the term meaningful for an awful long period of time. The San Francisco Giants are a very good baseball team, but they're not playing meaningful baseball really this weekend. Tampa Bay Rays are a great baseball team. They're not playing meaningful baseball. I mean, not to them. They understand the implications of what they do, but who knows who they'll put on the field? Who knows how hard they'll try? It really doesn't matter to them. For the Blue Jays, the Yankees, and the Red Sox, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is what it's all about. Let me talk to you a bit about Ryu. We talked about it yesterday. The Daves, Perkins, and Hodge were on with us yesterday. We talked a lot about Ryu. I have a theory that whether he had a little crick in his neck or not, them putting him on the 10-day right away, like the day he woke, the next morning he woke up with the alleged crick in the neck, I think this was all decided on in advance. He hadn't pitched well. His fastball was flat. He wasn't getting the breaking ball over. He was tired. And they said, we're going to give him 10 days rest and bring him back for this Yankee series. What do you think of that theory?
I think that on some level, that's a very plausible explanation, Bob. I think that both things could be true. He could have had an issue with his neck, a strain of some kind, and he could have needed a break. And I think both of those things are probably true in the end. And when you look at what Pete Walker's been able to do during the course of the season with adjustments, you think about Jose Berríos, and in his case, he was tipping his pitches and needed to have a mechanical adjustment. I wonder, Bob and John, if we see tonight, if Hyunjin Ryu has a little different mechanical look. Is there a slight change that he makes? And again, it doesn't have to be huge. It could be as different as maybe it's a different pitch selection, some kind of a different approach. Doesn't have to be a full mechanical change, but I think we'll see some subtle change with Hyunjin Ryu tonight. Right. That in comparison to what we saw the last couple times out, he was not good. He looked tired. And I think, Bob, when you think about what Pete Walker can do from an adjustment standpoint, I think we'll see a combination of the good adjustments from a very, very good pitching coach in Pete Walker, and also just the benefit of rest. We're at a late time of the year when I think now we're starting to see the effects of the shortened 2020, now the full 2021. Remember, this is at a time of year where typically in the past with a 40-man roster, you would not have had to make a roster move. But now with the roster expansion only going to 28 players, you have to make those changes. And it's not just giving an extra day or an extra break. You really have to actually put a player on the IL. So I think that's exactly what this is. It was a player who needs rest, a player who needs an adjustment. And tonight it's going to be so interesting, guys, to see just how good that adjustment is and how effective Hyunjin Ryu has been in working with Pete Walker on that adjustment.
John, how quickly do you pull him out? I mean, that becomes, I think, the key question.
It's a great question, John. I think the leash is not terribly long because, first of all, you have to treat this like an elimination game, that basically every one of these games is like a mini game seven. And the benefit here, and I think strategically the Jays made a good decision to have him start this Tuesday, is you have a fully rested bullpen. No one threw a pitch yesterday. So you have everybody rested and ready to go. This allows you to go early in the game with a Merriweather if you have to, a Stripling if you have to. It's a really good time to have Hyunjin pitch because it's really, yes, there is some risk here, but it's a high reward. If he gives you a bunch of quality innings, wonderful. And then it sets your bullpen up well for the next couple of days. If he doesn't have it, or if you only want to have him go one time through the lineup, give or take, fine. You've got a fully rested bullpen. You have a couple extra pitchers on your staff because it's a 28-man roster. And you had a full off day yesterday. It's a really good scenario, John. I think it's a good scenario to let Hyunjin pitch as long as he can. But if he doesn't have it, you have more than enough relievers to back him up because of the off day yesterday.
Where's the advantage? We have teams that are streaking here. The Red Sox lost three straight to the New York Yankees. Yankees have won, what, six in a row, something like that. Where would you rather be? Would you rather be on a six-game winning streak or on a losing streak going to the last week of the season?
I think right now the Yankees are playing just a lot better baseball than the Red Sox are. That's why it's actually unique. And you can go back into history, and I know we talked before about those games the Jays played against the Nationals and lost them back in August, and how wouldn't you love to have those games back? But I think over the weekend, I think for the Jays' perspective, they would have rather had the Red Sox win that series and knock the Yankees back another game or two. And that way the Jays would have had the best chance to knock off the team that was closest to them because they were playing them directly. I think the weekend results were not great from the Jays' perspective because it was the team that is now having the advantage. The Yankees is now further away from them in the standings. I think that the Yankees, one of the biggest things that's gone on for them this year is Judge and Stanton finally together and healthy. This is really in 4 years, the first time, actually, the most games we have seen them play together, the most home runs we have seen them hit. The Yankees right now, even after having that day off, I think they have tremendous momentum, and they're feeling like they can continue this tremendous winning streak, just as the Cardinals have. Look at what they're doing right now. They've already won more than a dozen games in a row. It's been amazing. Mm-hmm. I think the Yankees are feeling great. The Red Sox have a little bit of a crisis right now, but the Red Sox are playing the right teams. Non-contending Orioles, non-contending Nationals. The Red Sox should be able to finish this season, I believe, at least 4-2, which makes it a harder task for the Jays to make the playoffs unless they find a way to, at the very least, win this series against the Yankees, but ideally sweep it. Because if they could do that, then they truly control their own destiny.
Beyond the two big bombers, what are the Yankees doing right? I mean, beyond Stanton and Judge.
I think their pitching has been more consistent. The bullpen's been better. Chapman's coming back, and I think he has been better of late. And I think the complementary pieces have started to fill in a bit. We still haven't totally seen LeMahieu be LeMahieu. I think getting Urshela back has been crucial for them. Torres has been a little bit better. But I really think it's been those two guys. You know, Gallo has been good, not great. Rizzo, I think, has been a really solid two-hitter. He's getting on base. I think Anthony, I give him credit because he has had a different role with the Yankees than he had with the Cubs. And I think Rizzo, of their two deadline moves, has been probably the more effective one. But I think it's been balanced. But really, to me, John, I go back to those two key guys and Judge, Stanton. They have been as advertised, and it's been now a collection of guys around them. Sanchez has had some good games as well. Rizzo has been consistent. Again, Gallo's been okay. But I really think it's been those two guys plus a little more consistency in the rotation, I think has been encouraging for them. And Gerrit Cole, it's going to be so much fun, guys. You see Gerrit Cole going for a Cy Young Award just as Robbie Ray is. And so now it's all coming down to this last week to see who's going to win the award. It's great for baseball to have all these races coming together all in one series right now between the Jays and the Yankees.
Well, but Cole has stubbed his toe a couple times over the last three or four outings. And right. I wonder if that's going to make a difference. I mean, I know we're talking about the Cy Young Award when you're in a pennant race is sort of kind of dumb, I think. But Ray has been better over the last three or four starts. And I wonder whether recent memory is going to play a factor in this. I put him slightly ahead right now, to tell you the truth, in the Cy Young voting.
I do think, Bob, as you enter the final week here, Ray is the leader. But we have to see how things play out. And this is where you look at Ray's innings. I think he has 11 more innings than Cole. That to me matters. His ERA is, I think, half a run lower than Cole's. That to me matters as well.
Strikeouts are higher.
Right. Also, one thing that it's an interesting thing to consider right now, but how do you factor in the three different home ballparks that Ray has had to deal with? That is a very unique set of circumstances that as a voter, you don't often have to consider.
Never.
But now, do you give him bonus points effectively for successfully adapting to new pitching environments multiple times during the year? That is, to me, a really, really important factor in Robbie Ray's favor. And perhaps thinking about the news of the week, guys, maybe it's a little foreshadow of if this whole Tampa Bay Montreal plan comes together, if they're going to be able to have that success where they've got a switch of home ballpark in season is now being part of the normal course of business there for the Tampa Bay Rays.
I wanted to get to that, and we're going to take a break first, and then we will. We'll chat about a couple of other things related to the Blue Jays and then this Montreal Tampa Bay nonsense. Back after these messages. Shannon McCowan, JP, Morosi, for those who aren't aware. Before we get to the Tampa Bay situation, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. In my mind, Gurriel becomes an important piece of the puzzle for the Toronto Blue Jays. I suspect he won't be able to play, and I suspect it'll be because he can't hit. But we don't know that as we sit here and record this. How important is he to this team? in your opinion, looking from afar?
Crucial. He's been one of the more consistent players. I think it's been a little perhaps unnoticed by a lot of fans in the States because we've really focused a lot on Vlad and Semien to a degree, and then Springer's status coming back in the lineup. But I think Gurriel's been one of the most important Jays this season. I think his absence is a huge detriment to this team right now. But this is where you have to look at the positive side of the Jays, is that they're used to having to cycle in new outfielders and cover. And this is where having a healthy Springer, having Grichuk, having Dickerson to be able to have him part of the mix, and of course, Teoscar, who's at a career year, they will miss him, but they are also a rare team that can cover the absence of a player that talented, because at least having Springer back as part of the club has allowed the rest of the outfield mix to settle in a little bit. And I think they'll be able to, on some level, have the personnel to cover it. But there's also no mistaking how crucial Gurriel has become for this Blue Jays team.
Well, and most importantly,
guys. At the plate, though. More at the plate.
Of course. Yeah, he's a great arm, but just an okay, at best, defensive outfielder. But you know what, guys? If you've watched this team, as John and I have at least, what you have to remember is the number of times that Gurriel has come up in key situations and produced. Well, he got 4 grand slams this year. Mm-hmm. He's got a boatload of RBIs. When it doesn't matter, he doesn't perform, it seems. But when the game is on the line, when you really need a hit, I'll tell you, I'm not sure I would put Vladdy up ahead of Gurriel. I probably would, but I think about it. He's been that good in clutch situations, and that's where you are this week, potentially.
You're right. And you think about his family story, and obviously that's the kind of hitter that his brother is in Houston. Mm-hmm. And I think you consider his background in the game in Cuba growing up there for that family. It's just, they've played a lot of really big games. They have, as a family, they're used to the big stage, big international tournaments, certainly more so for his brother than for Lourdes. But this is part of their DNA almost. I mean, they have just been playing in huge games internationally for decades as a family. And I really think that cumulative experience and being able to handle the big moments, I really think you reflect on those experiences. And from having covered baseball games in Latin America, the way the crowds are there, the passion, the intensity, the pressure on each individual swing, games of this magnitude for Lourdes, for his brother Yuli, this is normal. They've been doing this since they were kids. And I really think that you're seeing that calmness play in a huge way for the Jays throughout the course of the season.
All right, let's
because I mean, this three-game stand is so important, and I want to go back to Gerrit Cole for a second. How healthy is he when he pitches Wednesday night? How healthy is he,
John? It's a fair question. I think overall, you know, certainly he had some interruptions to his season. Obviously, he was out for a while on the COVID IL as well. I think overall he's been able to get to this spot of the calendar in pretty good health. I don't think that anything that Cole is going through right now, John, is something of an acute nature that's a real imminent and proximate concern for the Yankees. I think it probably fits under the heading of more normal fatigue at this time of the year, or maybe the additional day off helps him entering this series. But I think overall, Cole is in a pretty good spot. Of course, he was able to pitch the opener on Friday at Fenway, and the Yankees win that game. So I think overall, he's pretty healthy, pretty good. And in many ways, probably no different than many other pitchers at this time of year.
All right. The Tampa Bay Montreal story. So Tampa Bay, I don't know if have they, or are, I think they are going to.
No, today? Signage in the playoffs. Oh, okay. I think it was for playoffs.
So they're going to put up a sign that says essentially that the deal is committed to, for the Rays to play half their games in Tampa or St. Pete and half their games in Montreal, pending Montreal building a stadium. I have heard all kinds of nonsensical conversation about this, but here is the ultimate truth. This is the precursor to Tampa Bay leaving and becoming the Montreal Expos again. That is the only scenario that makes sense. That is the only scenario that fits. What they are talking about now is some kind of an overlap, perhaps, in order to fulfill the lease requirements that the Rays have with St. Petersburg. Is there any reason to believe that that's not accurate?
I think, Bob, that a couple of things. I really believe, based on from my conversations this week, that the Rays are going to give this a good faith effort to have this sharing situation for an interim period of time. And they may even say this is the long-term solution. And here's why I think it actually makes more sense than you might consider on the surface. This idea involves a new open-air ballpark in both markets. It mm-hmm. doesn't have to be a huge one, okay, in either place. And part of the reason is that in Montreal, if you're going to only play there for the summer, it can be open air. You don't need to have a dome if you're going to be able to play in Montreal in June, July, August, September even. You can play outside there during those months. And in Tampa, you think about it as this becomes your new spring training home plus April and May, just to use it as a rough parameters here of the schedule. And where I think it actually makes a lot of sense and has appeal, and where the players union could get on board with this, is you don't have to move any more than you normally would if theoretically you have the season finishing in Montreal. Think of it as just delaying the start of your northward move an extra month or two to allow you to take advantage of the best weather. So if you build a smallish stadium in Tampa, let's say it seats 12,000, 15,000 fans, open air, and you move your spring training base to that place, you have your players move there in February, you have February, March spring training, you play your April, May games there, and then by June, you move up to Montreal where it's gorgeous, best summer of probably of any city in North America, and you're there for the balance of the year. And then when you can maybe alternate your playoff games one city to the next, it allows I think the players to conceptualize it better. You're still moving one time. You're just, instead of moving at the end of March, you're moving at the end of May, which is frankly better from a standpoint of school with your kids in school, and you take advantage of the best weather in both cities. I there's more merit to this idea, and I think in some ways the Jays experience, Bob and John, moving around uniquely the last couple of years, while not ideal, has maybe opened some eyes to how this type of arrangement could actually work.
Not buying it.
This is just a way of trying to leverage, whether it be the county government or the city government or the municipal governments in the Tampa Bay area to build a new stadium. That's all it is.
No, I think it's the other way around, John. I think it's leverage against this on the city of Montreal to build a major league ballpark, because I think the owner would move the team there tomorrow. I think that's what he's going to do.
It's not, I'll say this, it's not going to happen next year, clearly, because for this to happen, you have to have a downtown. You have
a facility in Montreal.
Right. Yeah. And
it's going to take at least 3 years.
Right. So the Olympic Stadium works as a short term place if you had to play it there for a year, but you can't really move a team there unless you know there's a shovel in the ground and the stadium coming. I realize there are obstacles here. I'm just indicating that I believe there is greater merit to this concept than maybe we realized a couple of years ago.
You know, here the fascination is, if it does happen and they do have to go to Olympic Stadium in the interim, this team will play in the two worst stadiums in Major League Baseball.
That's right.
I would say this. Okay, I have been to Olympic Stadium for Jays games at the end of spring training. It was what, 2 or 3 years ago. I thought that facility, Olympic Stadium right now, is every bit as good as either the Trop or Oakland.
Yeah.
They're from a temporary standpoint, it's really no different than those two places, in my opinion.
The one thing that Oakland has ahead of both of them is its natural turf. That's the
right, right. And to me, here's how I look at it with Montreal. And this is one of the unknowns here. And actually, it is a known unknown to some extent, because you look at what happened in Buffalo. The fans there, even though it was a very short-term situation, the crowds in Buffalo were strong. In some ways, you could say the crowds in Buffalo for the Jays were better than what many Rays crowds are for in Tampa during the course of the season. And it just shows that there is enthusiasm in markets for major league teams, even if they don't have them for the full 81 games. And I believe that in Montreal, if even if it was at Olympic Stadium, I think crowds for Rays games in Montreal would be better now, even if it's Olympic Stadium, than they are for most of the year in Tampa Bay. You would get more fans in Montreal today than you would in Tampa.
Answer me this question, YouTube brainchilds. Why would you stay in Tampa? Tampa fans have done nothing but say, we're not interested. You have arguably the best team over the last 10 years in baseball. 10 years may be long, but this is a really good team, a really good organization. They went to the World Series. They're going to win a division again this year, and nobody pays attention to them. Why would you think the owner would hold out to stay in Tampa Bay? And the argument, Morosi, that it's too cold, I got news for you. The Montreal Expos in 1967, eight. When they started.
Yeah.
Played outdoors.
Right.
Played outdoors for a long time. The Toronto Blue Jays played outdoors for 12 years.
Yeah.
And you live with it. I was there. Was it cold some nights? Yeah. Was it the end of the world? No.
It's cold in Detroit too.
It's cold in Detroit. It's cold in Boston. It's cold in Chicago. It's cold in Minnesota. Minnesota's playing outdoors now.
Right.
You don't need a dome. And the only reason you play in April, May.
The only reason you leave Florida is if you have a new stadium and you can guarantee your revenues are higher. And I'm not sure that the difference between the tax system in the province of Quebec and the tax system in the state of Florida, it's so positive for Florida. That's why you stay in Florida.
I think that that's part of it, John. That's a very good point. Obviously, that's something the players would be very concerned about and want to follow. The other part is television. Let's think about this. If you have this team splitting its time between Tampa and Montreal. So the current situation is you have one regional sports network in Florida broadcasting the team. And by the way, they're well viewed. The viewership numbers from a standpoint of consuming the TV product of the Rays are strong. Again, a lot of retirees, maybe they were Red Sox fans, Tigers fans, Yankees fans, they're Indians fans, Reds fans. They moved down to Florida. That's their second team. They watch the Rays games. And then you add into that a Montreal TV market where you'd be able to sell the media rights twice, English and French. So now you have three different networks broadcasting the games of this two-city team, three television revenue streams. And I think one of the things where the Expos departure, which the timing was obviously hard in so many different ways, but if they had stayed there for five more years, six, seven more years, the media rights explosion in the 2010s, or even the really right in that decade, they just missed it. And I think that at that point in time, 2004, when they moved, they hadn't really realized the benefits of being able to sell the media rights in two different languages and all the money that would make. I really think that Montreal, from a media rights standpoint alone, even if we acknowledge, I think I agree, attendance would be way up in Montreal relative to Tampa, but the media rights is a slam dunk. And I really think that that is a key component where you could have three different television properties, Florida English, Montreal French. Three revenue streams is a pretty good thing for baseball.
Yeah, well, they'll need 50 revenue streams in order to make enough money to break even if they stay in Tampa Bay. They're not interested. I think the Tampa Bay Rays in April and May could play in a little league park and not fill it. But we'll find out, I guess. Although I'm not even betting that this thing, they can babble about all this. My guess is they're going to Montreal and they're going to be there, and that'll be the end of that. And speaking of the end of that, this is the end of this because we're out of time. You have consumed all of the available airspace, Morosi. And we must now
apologies. We had a lot of fun though. We went from Montreal, Ann Arbor, all of my Toronto, all my favorite cities to either live in or go to. And I look forward to the next one, my friends.
And I look forward to the steak dinner.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. Can't wait.
You aren't even in this bet.
No. I'm the arbitrator. I have to be in the steak dinner.
He has to supervise the
Bob.
Either they do or they don't.
But just suck it up, Bob. You have to live with it.
It's all good.
It ain't over till the fat lady sings, and she's not even warbling yet. Goodbye, Morosi.
Au revoir.
There's JP. We'll come back to wrap it after these messages. Well, you're chortling already.
I've never seen you more animated over a baseball topic that really didn't have anything to do with the actually playing the game than the Tampa-Montreal thing.
Well, because the world is all stupid if they're buying into this. You don't even buy into this.
No, I don't. The only way, I mean, this to me, if they put that sign up, this is the beginning of the end in Tampa, and we are going to see the Expos, and they just need to find an owner with very deep pockets.
Well, a partner, because I don't think the existing owner really wants to give up all his equity in this, but he's more than willing to bring a partner in. Yeah. This is a fait accompli. This is a mirage. You people are all, 2 years, 5 years from now, however long it takes. If they have to, they'll wait till the lease is up in St. Pete. But this team's going to Montreal, period, end of story. Even if they had to play at the Olympic Stadium for a decade, they're going to go to Montreal.
Well, that's a bit much, Bob. It's
10 years too much.
Yeah.
But it's going to, I don't know if they found land, if they've got land. They're going to have to build a stadium. It should be an outdoor stadium. The whole notion that Morosi was spewing about weather being a problem in Montreal, BS. It wasn't a problem in the 60s and 70s. It wasn't a problem in Toronto. It isn't a problem in Detroit or Minnesota or any place else where it's chilly in the spring. So what? Bundle up. It's baseball.
Chilly.
Snowy.
You know what that means, though? I tell you, you know what's exciting about it? If they do it and they play outdoors in Montreal, double headers.
Well, they're in the same division. And they're in the same division as the Toronto Blue Jays.
That'd be nice.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it? We got to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.